Blog Talk Radio.
All right, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, this is the Tornado.
And we're coming at you 5 minutes or 6 minutes late. Hey, we're here. And not sure if we have a guest yet. Kind of working on it. I know we have a guest for next week. I sent an email about me. I figured you'd be excited. Butterbean.
Yeah. You know what you got to do to promote that one? You got to post my picture with the bean.
Do you have a picture with the bean? I did not know that.
You do not know that? Oh, sure. I'll send it to you right now.
All right.
You didn't know I had a picture with the bean.
Well, we do want to mention, even if we don't get him on the show, we have a new VIP sponsor, Discipline, DISSIPLINE.com. I was trying to get the owner of the company, Corey, on the show tonight. But we didn't get a response back from him. We might have him on briefly next week. We're trying to get Tim Sylvia for tonight, who's also on the same card that Butterbean's going to be on the 21st. I don't know if I mentioned this on the last show, but Butterbean and Lynn Byers are supposed to be fighting. And I'm pretty sure I didn't mention that I've heard that it's going to be staged. I don't know if that's a great idea for MMA, you know, especially in a state that's supposed to be regulating this sport. Now they supposedly have staged fight.
What did you say again? What was it?
Lynn Byers versus Butterbean.
Oh, you're a hockey player.
Right. That's going to be a charity fight on this card in Worcester, Massachusetts. So it's an exhibition. So technically, it doesn't matter if it's staged or not. You know, it's legal, but still, it's kind of shady. That's already circulated before the event that it's going to be staged. Can't be good. But anyway, getting back to Discipline, if you go to DISSIPLINE.com, you can learn more about those guys. And they're looking for Philadelphia area fighters, believe it or not.
Nice.
They want to give a free strength and conditioning session by a certified MMA conditioning coach in exchange for representing the Discipline brand. So go to info or email info@discipline.com to learn more about that from Corey Disson. And it's not Discipline as in, like, diss you. I'm going to diss you because I don't like you. It's Discipline because it's Corey Disson is the guy's name. So keep that in mind, even though it's cool either way. Because in a sense, if you have discipline, that means you're going to diss the other guy with your discipline. We're looking forward to working with those guys. We got them half entrenched. We're still working on getting the MySpace heads up and stuff, and that whole works. But we got them on the blog, we got them on the main page, and we're hooking them up with some advertising. They're hooking us up with a little bit of revenue. So, thank you, Discipline. We're working with Prime Athletic here. We have a new Ring Girl contest winner. We had two of them, actually, Manifap and Dominique. Dominated the contest. They both had over 3,000 votes. So, congratulations to those girls. We're going to have some release forms out to them tomorrow so that we can get some shirts sent out to them, and they'll take some pictures in them, because I decided that I'm not taking chances anymore, you know. These girls, I send them these nice packages, give them a free page on the website, and all I ask is that they take pictures in the gear that I send them, so it makes my sponsors look good. They send out all the stuff, and I never get a picture back on the stuff, so now I'm going to do release forms, so that they have to sign this form that says they're going to pose in it, or else they don't get it. So we'll see how that works. I'm pretty sure they'll be scared of being sued. So they'll send me some pictures back. I hate to have to do that, but hey, you know. It's a big part of our website, this Ring Girl contest, and we're getting 6,000 votes for two different girls. I want to see them in some damn shirts. But Prime Athletic is sponsoring that. PrimeAthletic.com, they're a local company here in Massachusetts, and also Discipline already sent us a couple shirts for those ladies, so they're going to get those too. Other than that, we, of course, have the big boxing match to talk about, which was obviously not what I predicted. Not quite what you predicted, but at least you got the
It's kind of hard to be wrong when you bet on a 4-1 favorite. I really, really thought Shane would have done more. But the one thing that I thought would be a downfall, and I kind of saw this
in his second fight with Vernon Forrest.
You know, the first fight, Forrest caught him early, kind of stunned him, kind of took Mosley out of his game plan, and he was able to, beat him up pretty good. The second fight, I was predicting Mosley to win, figuring, okay, because the first fight he got caught with a headbutt and he was kind of off his game, and Forrest dropped him with an uppercut. And Mosley was pretty hurt. But I said, in the second fight, I thought Mosley would beat Forrest. And I said, just for the sheer fact that, let's take the headbutt out of, effect here. Mosley had won that first round before he got a headbutt, then he got hurt with the uppercut. But that whole second fight against Forrest and his second fight with De La Hoya, Mosley was doing, you'll see it in my article, where I said one of his weaknesses is sometimes he's more sizzle than steak. And he does a lot of, these feint moves and his juke moves, and he rolls his hands. But the thing is, he's not letting him go, and he's not throwing enough punches. And sometimes he does that when he's not comfortable in there. He did that in the second fight against Forrest and the second fight against De La Hoya. And he wasn't throwing enough punches. And I thought he lost both fights, even though he got the De La Hoya decision. And after he stunned Mayweather in the second round, and Rich, Mayweather was legitimately hurt.
It was the second round.
After he legitimately stunned him in the second round, he caught him with the one right hand, and the feet kind of got caught up. But the second one, when Mayweather's knees buckled, and when they kind of broke apart, Mayweather took about 4 or 5 steps back. You could tell he was definitely buzzed from it. But that was, I think, the problem. I think Mosley a little bit got so over-anxious by landing that punch and getting that result that he threw his game plan out the window. The first round, I thought he did very good using his jab. The one problem, he was pitter-patting the jab too much. Like I said, he would. But I thought he would eventually settle down on it.
Not only did he lose his game plan after a certain round, I don't know whether it was a fourth or fifth, but after a certain point, not only did he lose his game plan, but he just totally looked out of shape. He looked out of place. He looked like he could not get his balance. And he just, he played right into Floyd's game. And I emailed you or Facebooked you or something about, I think we're going to see a marathon tonight. Floyd did not run for one of the first fights I've ever seen in a long time with Floyd. He did not even backpedal a lot. I mean, he just kind of stood there. Didn't really move forward either, but, when he had to, he did. And he just kind of just stood there in the middle of the ring and waited for Mosley to come to him. And he did fight somewhat defensively, but I think he fought more offensively than we've seen in a while. And I remember right before the fight, he said something to his father. And I don't know what he said, but I kind of had the feeling it was something along the lines. I'm going to show them that I'm not just a runner, He must have said something to that effect, because I think he wanted to prove something. And the announcers were even saying that, what is he trying to prove? He was definitely, going in there knowing that Mosley was going to try for the knockout, and Mosley was going to expect him to run. So I think he just went in there and said, I'm going to fight a completely different fight, and I'm going to turn a lot of heads, and people, and he wanted to get to the point where people are begging for the Pacquiao fight,
Right.
And he made it look like he could beat Pacquiao in that type of fight, but Mosley really did not have his best game. He started off really well, but the thing he was doing with his jab, I really was pissed off about, because I was just, it was kind of embarrassing to listen to his corner, the way his corner was going about it. His corner really wasn't giving him the best advice until the end when he started losing.
I think Nadim was giving him decent advice, and he wasn't following it.
I don't know. I think he was just giving him generalizations in the beginning. And then after a while, he started, getting into the motivation aspect of it and telling him, how to go about strategy-wise. In the beginning, it seemed like he was just kind of saying, don't go for the power. Don't try to knock him out. Just let it come to you. and that was working, so he didn't really deviate from that. But then after a while, he started just, you know, kind of saying, you know, got to use that jabs, different things like that. But I don't know, I think the real breakdown for me watching it was when Mosley kept using that jab and not throwing it, like just kept pumping it out there like he was going to throw it. And
he kept flicking
it. You said he should do, but without throwing a punch in the middle of it, you know. If you're going to fake it, you know, go with a right hand or something. Throw a right
hand. What he should have done, I can understand using the feint, you know, to get Mayweather to commit or Mayweather to freeze or try to come first. But if you're going to throw the double, okay, you can throw a little two of those flick jabs out. It looked like he was hitting the double end bag. He was just flicking it, just flicking it. And you know, this the first round, he punched
the
jab
early.
In the first round, he landed a couple in the mouth and a couple in the chest. But after that, he started doing that little flick jab again. And why did Oscar De La Hoya come so close to beating Floyd Mayweather? Because he used a steady, hard jab. You know, he put it right in his chest. He put it right in his shoulder. Mosley didn't do that. Now, I think Nazeem Richardson did a good job in the corner because he was telling him the right thing to do. First, you know, use speed. Don't, you know, try to get too wild. But I think what happened to Mosley is when he landed them two big shots, he got so overexcited. And
I don't think he realized how hurt Mayweather was either, you know. That's the other thing. I don't think he let the killer instinct set in. He just fought his fight thinking the knockout might come, but like he didn't go all out for it.
Well, but the mistake he made, and watch that second round again, when he landed those two big shots, then he tried, and he smothered himself. What you cannot do when you're fighting a guy is like you need to give some room to land your punches to get full power on him. De La Hoya made the same mistake. De La Hoya, he would get Mayweather on the ropes, and he would like literally like lay on top of him, and he's trying to throw these punches with his long arms, and he's getting no power on him. That was the problem. He was smothering his punches. You know, Mosley did the same thing. He smothered his offense. That's why he didn't land good punches after he got him hurt. I think he got too over-anxious, and I think he kind of burned himself out. And even though, and I, you know how I feel about Larry Merchant. I don't often agree with him. And Mosley was like, you know, I was tight in there. And Larry Merchant's like, you've been a pro for like, you know, 18 years. How can you possibly be tight? But Mosley was disappointing. I thought he would do a little bit better in a given count of that. But I think Nazeem hit all the right points. You know, use what brought you to the dance. You know, get in there. And finally, the 12th round, if you go back to the 12th round, then Mosley finally was like, oh, shit. Let me start, you know, getting some body shots and let me start cranking some hooks in here. And he landed a few of them. Too late.
Interesting, too. Like, I think Floyd figured out after a little while that Mosley was headhunting. You know, while he was throwing punches, even though he wasn't throwing enough, he was headhunting. Floyd got to the point where he knew that he was always going to get hit in the head, so that he had his elbows way up in the air. I mean, like, totally wide open for digging body shots. And Mosley was just so intent on getting him out of there, getting the knockout, because he knew he couldn't go 12 rounds with him, that he spent himself early. And he just never had his footing under him. I mean, if you notice, from the beginning, he was all over the place. He was wrestling, you know. And Mayweather was kind of playing into it a little bit, but it just seemed like Mosley was the more awkward one every time, and it just did not look like the same type of guy that was in there for the Margarito fight, where Margarito had way more reach than Mayweather, and Mosley still made it look like it was his fight, and he had no problem with that. And with Mayweather, it was just a completely different story. He had no gas, he had no balance, and it just seemed like maybe the whole hand-wrapping incident this time screwed him instead of Margarito like it did last time.
Right.
You know, because it was the start of the fight late. He didn't seem like he ever had a rhythm from the very beginning. It was Floyd's hometown, so everything was against him. And then not only that, but I guess before the fight even started, there was a bunch of stuff that Floyd had mentioned about Mosley having to take an advance and the fact that he was only getting paid $2.7 million for the whole fight, and Mayweather's getting like 20-something million. You know, so...
Yeah, I haven't heard something about that.
That was kind of a thing.
I had no idea.
Mayweather makes him seem like he's a cardboard box because he had to get an advance on his $2.7 million payday.
Well,
but that's just trash talk. I don't know how much that has an effect on the guy's attitude going into a fight. But the bottom line is, you know, this is supposed to be a better fight, and it didn't turn out to be after the fourth or fifth round when it really started going Mayweather's way. It was just too easy. And, you know, as much as Mosley gave it a go, I was really disappointed, you know, because the way it made it sound, you know, he was in the gym like it was, he woke up in the gym. He was sleeping in the gym, you know, eating, sleeping, tasting boxing every day, you know, so he expected so much more out of him this fight. He expected an improvement over the Margarito fight, and I think what we got was, it was just a bundle of nerves, and even with that, he started off good, but it was just like too much nervous energy rather than calculated.
Yeah, exactly what it was.
You know, planned out.
And it was, you know, he never got himself relaxed in it.
No,
and
never.
I think they had the right game plan. He just didn't execute it. I mean, you could have the best game plan in the world. That's like, you know, a football team comes out there like, hey, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to, you know, start the game off. I'm going to do this pass, and I'm going to do this run. Then I'm going to go here. I'm going to gain 15 yards on this play. Then I'm going to get out, and I'm going to score. And you know what happens? The other team comes out and blitzes you, knocks your quarterback on the ass, and next play you're getting intercepted, and now you're down 7-0. You know, you might have the greatest game plan in the world, but you got to execute it. You know,
the thing that most impressed me about that entire fight was the way Floyd handled himself in the ring. You got the point where you're watching that fight, and even if you hate the guy, you got to give Floyd a lot of respect and a lot of props for letting Mosley hang in there and just kind of toying with him at the end, just to let him finish the fight. Because I think Floyd could have taken him out at any point past the 10th. You know, the way he was fighting. And he just let him hang in there because he had some respect for him. And it just seemed like he was just kind of playing the cat with the half-dead mouse. Smacking him around just to smack him around, you know, because he trained very well for that fight, obviously. He was in great shape, like he always is. So, you know, he just wanted to establish the fact that he could control the pace, no matter what. And he did. But he definitely seemed like he could have knocked him out at any point and just didn't want to do it to him. You know, just had too much respect for the guy, even after all the smack talk.
But I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, like, to knock a guy like Mosley out, he's very durable, he's never been stopped, he's only been down once in his career, you got to put yourself in the danger zone for that, too. And I think Floyd is also like, you know what, I got this fight won, I'm going to hit him without getting hit, I'm not going to stand in front of him, I'll put myself in the danger zone. So, let me just win the decision.
Right.
Hell with the fans, they don't like it.
But, it was definitely a fight that started off well. Seemed interesting. It seemed like a good matchup. But somewhere along the way, it just kind of devolved into the Floyd Mayweather show. Which, I mean, as Floyd Mayweather shows go, was still pretty good. And I think that was his most offensive fight that he's had in really forever, from what I've seen anyway. I haven't watched all his fights. Man, that was a show. He really wowed the crowd and had people into it. You know, a lot of people were cheering for Mosley, trying to get him motivated. Mayweather just fought his fight, for sure, and fought a different fight than we're used to seeing from him. But he's going to have to get past all this bullshit with the defamation, steroid issue with Manny, whether he's going to do the steroid testing or what, we don't know. But I guess that's still a sticking point. He mentioned something like, you know, as long as he pees in the cup, I'm good.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think it's a little bit ridiculous, but, I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, why leave all that money on the table for bullshit? Both of them. I am sure there is a potential compromise in here. And I think, you know, what's going to be the holdup on it, they're my two favorite people in the world, and you know what names I don't have to mention, but I think they are going to be more of the holdup than Floyd Jr. and Manny Pacquiao, Freddie Roach. It's going to be senior and uncle, you know, with their big mouths and their attitudes that are going to, you know, fuck this up.
Well, that is a really old picture with you and Butterbean, huh? What are you, like 12?
You know, dude.
No, I'm just kidding. That's funny. Butterbean looks young. Butterbean looks like he just got out of college.
So what?
Butterbean looks like he just got out of college or something.
Yeah. Well, you figure it was a world title fight down in Atlantic City. David Reed fought the main event. Butterbean fought in the card, knocked this guy in the third round. And I saw him in the lobby when the fight was over. And like, you know, the card started leaving. I'm like, hey, can I get my picture? He's like, yeah, sure. He's like, he's really cool. Just as we're getting after the photos, he's like, two guys were walking by. He's like, this is in 1999. You know, Tyson was still fighting. It was about 2 years after the ear bite incident. He had just come back. And they're like, where are you going to fight Tyson? Why don't you fight Tyson? Tyson will kill you. He's like, I'll fight Mike Tyson, but it's got to be a four-rounder. He goes, yeah, Tyson will kill you. Tyson will kill you. He goes, I'll fight him in a four-rounder. They were like, and these guys were like,
that'd be a good fight now, wouldn't it?
What?
That'd be a good fight now.
Why not? I mean,
he needs the money.
He's like, these guys were like heckling Butterbean, and he was getting like all pissed off. He's like, you're going to fight Mike Tyson in the four-rounder. And,
I think Mike Tyson wasted him in his prime, but right now, that actually sounds like a good fight. Butterbean versus Tyson. Let's promote it. Let's get it done.
Well, the snap in the photo, he was looking at these other guys. I'm like, you asses.
It was a good interview. I actually got him on Fight Beat when I did a couple articles for them. I did one on Iceman John Scully and one on Butterbean. And I think it was Boxing Scene. I did the one on Reggie Johnson. But Reggie Johnson's in a little bit of trouble. I mentioned last week. I've been in communication with his aunt, Queen Esther, she calls herself, and been trying to get a little bit more of the story from her. And basically, it sounds like there's this company or, you know, this group of people that they call the Houston Urban League. And they're caught up in a lot of controversy and indictments and corruption. And basically what happened is Reggie was intending to do this boxing camp. And, you know, he had a list of his people that he'd signed up. And, you know, he had made all the preparations and everything. But apparently there were some other people that were signing people up to the camp that Reggie had no idea about. So, you know, I have to, of course, actually look at the legal documents. I haven't seen a single legal document, but I'm basically trying to get them out of the conspiracy mode because, you know, that's not going to get you anywhere, just saying, well, they're out to get me. You know, if you don't have the facts straight and you don't know how to go get around the law and prove your point and get your evidence in, then, you know, you could scream to the high heavens about how you're getting screwed, but it's not going to help you. So he's been putting out all these dispatches trying to get attention, and people are just thinking, well, maybe this guy is just not right in the head, instead of, well, maybe he's innocent. So maybe we'll be able to get him out of his predicament. But the problem is he's been given a $200,000 bail in this. And he's in jail with murderers who have lower bail. Can you imagine that?
That
sucks big time. He's been in jail for 2 years because he can't get the $200,000 off. And, you know, the best thing when you're trying to fight a case like this is to have your freedom, you know, at least to be able to get documents and run around and do errands. And, you know, when you have to rely on somebody else to do that because you're behind bars and you can't even get a decent lawyer because the public defender is just trying to work the system. You know, I don't know. I feel bad for him, but, you know, I haven't done anything with the criminal aspect, so I actually enlisted Patrick McElligott, who helped Reuben Carter back in the day. Reuben Hurricane Carter, when he was in jail, Patrick wrote some letters and helped out with his legal campaign and everything, and he actually just told me, he emailed me today, that Reuben Carter's birthday is today, so happy birthday to Reuben Carter. And hopefully we can all work together and get this story out there, number one. And number two, I think you need to get him a good lawyer or teach him how to be his own lawyer. And number three, we need to get him out so we can organize himself with his trial, get his bail reduced or something. You know? That's just ridiculous. $200,000. And I don't even know how much he's alleged to have even stolen. I mean, how many kids would have to sign up for a camp like that for it to be even over $200,000 that he supposedly sold, you know, stole, or whatever? That's got to be a lot of money. I don't know. But either way, we're going to be updating people on the blog when we get more information and we get to the actual documents. I know they're on the way in the mail now, so I don't want to tell the story before we know it. But if you're in the Houston area and you are a lawyer or know a good lawyer that does criminal law, look up Reggie at the local jail or wherever he's being housed and try to help him out because he needs it. Sounds like he's getting the old corruption cycle there, hardcore. And he's just locked into the judicial system where you're always guilty until proven innocent. Yeah, well, other than that, you know, obviously we have upcoming events, but I did want to talk briefly about this mixed martial arts and the Ultimate Fighter. I didn't see the entire episode this week, but I did catch the end of it. The Tokyo Day guy on the show gets the fight, and he gets the controversial decision, go figure. But I sent you a thing about somebody had posted a Yahoo answer asking if this guy is gay. You've got to be pretty stupid not to realize by this point.
I read that this morning, actually. if you sent it to me, so I'm like, I got to see what the hell this is about. So I go on there, and there's this guy making an answer. His name was Richard. And I was like, I started making fun of this guy. I sent an answer, not to even answer the question, just to make fun of this Richard character. So if you go back on there, you got to check it out. And I criticized Richard because this guy was like mentioning all people he's interviewed and shit. He forgot Ken Shamrock.
That's right.
How the hell do you forget that you interviewed Ken fucking Shamrock?
Sorry. That's the thing, you know, like, I always forget, actually, how many people I have interviewed, and then I always get to that point where I'm trying to remember the most famous person that I've ever interviewed. Ken Shamrock's right up there. I'm not sure if he's the most famous, but he's definitely up there.
Yeah, I mean, of the guys we've done the show with, let's pick out our top five. We got a few minutes, right? We don't have a guest.
Right.
Let's pick out our top five. Who do you think, and we're going to go boxing and MMA. Who do you think would be our top five?
Boxing top five? I mean, I don't know. I would have to consider people that I do conference calls with. You know, I got to ask them questions. I could do that in an interview. But I did Holyfield. I got a question in on once.
I'm talking, I want to say guests on our show. Top five guests on our show, famous-wise, boxing and MMA.
Most famous boxer we have. Let's see. Jeez, I don't know. I mean, this is not a good question. I'm so horrible with memory.
I know. That's why you have me. That's why you have Rain Man.
What was the most famous boxer? I mean, I keep thinking Gato Figueroa.
No, I mean, Gato was nice. I mean, he's got a few ESPN fights, and he got knocked out cold on ESPN by Randall Bailey, but no way would he be the most famous. No, not even close. I'm looking at some of the we've interviewed, you and I. We'll go to boxing. We've had Lou Duva.
Yeah, that's pretty famous.
That's pretty damn big. We had Vinny Paz, 5-time world champ right there.
That's going to be the most famous boxer.
Probably. We had the guy from Buffalo, Joey Giambra.
Right.
We had Petronelli.
Goody. Of course.
Yeah. What other fighters are we going to meet? We're going to meet other world champions. We're going to meet, like, Steve USS Cunningham. Well, Iceman John Scully. I mean, he's not mainstream well known, but he does a lot of shit for ESPN. So it's like whenever they have like fights, like he was doing like big like preview for the Mayweather Mosley fight. So I mean, and now he's training. So Iceman in the boxing circle is very well known. Like I said, but he wouldn't be as mainstream as guys like Lou Duva, Vinnie Paz would be, especially Vinnie Paz, because he's got the whole story with the broken neck and he's got the book out, he's got the movie in the works. So, I mean, those are some of the really big ones we had. We've had other guys that, you know, maybe aren't as mainstream, but have been HBO caliber fighters. What's his name? Chris Arriola. We've had guys like Harry Yorgi. He's been on HBO and Showtime a few times.
Hank Lundy.
We've had, I mean, what?
Who could forget Hank Lundy?
Hammer and Hank Lundy. He's been on ESPN a few times. But I'll say in the boxing world, probably our most famous have been guys like Vinny Paz, Lou Duva. A lot of, like, you would be older fans that might remember Joey Giambo, mainly because he fought Joey Giardello. But the Petronellis, we've had Pit Perrone. I mean, we've had guys that have been well-known in the boxing circle. I mean, some guys that maybe are not well-known in the boxing circle, but members of the Marciano family, that's pretty damn big. And then you go to MMA, like some of the big guys you
know. You know, apparently there's some nut out there who thinks there's some giant conspiracy behind the Rocky Marciano statue. And, you know, obviously we've talked about the fact that I don't work with the Marciano Foundation anymore. That's gone in a different direction. But, I mean, you know, I still make contact with some of the people that are working on stuff about Rocky. And this one guy just kind of dropped off the radar for a little while, and he started sending me all these emails again. The guy is writing like he's texting somebody, first of all. And, you know, not spelling things correctly and trying to act like he knows all this stuff, but he's, like, phrasing it like, you know, he only has 2 seconds to make this message. So everything is not phonetically correct and, you know, as shortened as possible. So he just comes off like a dumbass. And he's trying to act like he knows the whole secret behind all the Rocky statue and bullshit. This is starting to piss me off now because I've ignored him. He's like, he's sending me at least 2 or 3 messages a day. Like almost to the point of threatening me. And I have nothing to do with the statue.
Right.
He thinks I do. And then there's this other guy over in the UK who's writing a book about Rocky. And he heard our Nicky Sylvester interview. So he thinks I'm going to write his book with him. And do all this work and go to the library and get every single Brockton Enterprise article from Rocky's career. And I told him, look, you know, I'm not going to do that for you. You know, you got to come up with a budget if you're going to have me do that for you.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, the guy still sending me emails like I'm cooperating with him. Jeez. I just can't shake Rocky if I wanted to. Actually, I would have to say the most famous person I ever got to even ask a question would have to be Donald Trump. And you know why? Because it was an important question. And here it is.
Thank you. I'm expecting this from Richard Birdlong from UnlimitedFightThings.com.
Mr. Trump, obviously you have a ton of connections and a great deal of business savvy. I'm just wondering how you plan to make a strong niche for Affliction in such a crowded market, especially since it's starting to show some growing pains lately with indicators like the IFL growing dangerous in those results.
Yeah, I think that it will be interesting. And, you know, businesses, sometimes things work great and sometimes they don't work great. This is what I think is a natural. I'll let you know about it in about a year or two, okay? But I really think it's going to be very successful. And I think that our first fight is a really good indication of that because with a real startup, because this is a startup, no matter, you know, we can call it whatever we want to call it, but it's a startup, that we sold out a major arena in L.A. It's just an amazing thing. So I think it's going to be very successful. I'll let you know about it in a couple of years. Okay? Maybe you'll let me know about it. Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Trump.
Say hello to Tim.
Okay, thanks, sure.
Hey, Tim. Good luck, Tim.
Thanks, Earl.
Good luck.
Going? Whoa. I'm
Brad.
That was pretty cool.
Adam Frank and Kirk Sandberg.
Hello.
So that was Donald Trump. And it's kind of funny because, like, 2 years later, Affliction, the company that he was talking about there, was dead. So I did tell him about what we was doing 2 years. I wrote an article saying that it failed. So it was like he cursed himself there. And that was the last question of that session. So that was awesome today. I was able to get that in. And he said that because I was just thinking about that like a couple weeks ago. It's on my Zion Sucks page. And it's in like the list of recordings. And I just kind of listened to it. And I was thinking, you know, talk about foreshadowing. He just basically predicted the future. And he admitted that he didn't even know the heads or tails about what he was dealing with, you know? He was like, I'm not the expert. You're gonna be the one that's telling me how to do it. As far as MMA goes, we've had a bunch of people from the UFC. We had Joel Lozano on.
Joel Lozano. I mean, I still say the most famous MMA person we've had was Ken Shamrock. We've had Kung Lee. Don't forget Kung Lee.
And Frank Shamrock we had twice, I think. But we had Ken.
Yeah, but Frank was before my time on the show.
Right.
Yeah. I also mentioned when I...
One time I got to ask Kimbo about his most important goal in the sport, and he was able to tell me that it's all about the paper.
Yeah, I thought he was going to say, you know, to get people to grow beards like him or something.
Well, the latest thing is he's not fighting James Toney now. I don't know who he's fighting next, but now they're saying it's going to be Randy Couture fighting James Toney for his first fight. And I don't know which UFC or what the deal is. We'll find that out later, of course, but that's the news. That's fit to print. Talking about going back to boxing a little bit, did you see any of the undercard fights there? Anything that jumped out at you that you liked?
Well, the first fight of the night was pretty damn interesting. I don't know if you heard about it. It was last in a minute and a half. There were three knockdowns in the whole minute and a half. Fight starts off.
Hello? Lost a tornado.
Yo.
What happened? We lost the tornado there for a second.
We back on?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, you can hear me good. I was saying that the first fight tonight was Syed Kweli, and I don't remember the name of the guy who's fighting. They go out there, and the guy, say what?
I do remember that. That was a very interesting fight.
Well, I mean, Kweli didn't knock down in 20 seconds. It was kind of a flash knockdown. This guy jumped all over him, like, wing punches everywhere. And then Kweli catches him with a shot and puts him down. And then he gets up, and Kweli lands. He gets him against the ropes, lands at another shot. Drops him, the guy gets up, he's staggering all over the ring, and they stop the fight, which was a good stop because the guy's obviously out. So the punch numbers come up. In the minute and 47 seconds of the fight, the guy that won landed five punches and scored two knockdowns. That is 40% of the punches you landed put the guy on the canvas. That's pretty impressive.
It was like a lot of knockdowns in that fight, too, wasn't it?
So they
both guys got knocked down in the first round, and then...
Yeah, well, I mean, say Ali went down in the first 20 seconds, then he got up, and you figure the fight only went like a minute and 44 seconds, a minute 45 seconds, and there was three knockdowns. Kweli went down once, and then he got up and knocked the other guy down twice and stopped the fight. Trying to remember what else is in the card. Got a box rack in front of me. My computer is being angry again, and I think it's time to, you know, put it to sleep, euthanize it. Yeah, the one fight was, what was the guy's name? Damn it, this is where my Rain Man is starting to slip from me. By the way, Rich, I got to admit something to you. Do I sound stupider tonight?
Why, have you been drinking?
No, I got a wisdom tooth out the other day. I lost some of my wisdom.
$1,000.
Oh,
very funny.
So,
funny guy.
So, yeah. That's why my Rain Man ability did not be up to par.
Yeah, that sounded like a fun day that you posted on Facebook.
Look, going to work and dealing with bullshit to go get a tooth pulled? I said, you know, work's going bad, but you're looking forward to going to the dentist to get your tooth out.
Yeah, I've been to the
dentist
for like 15 years.
There's a couple other questions. What?
I've been to the dentist in at least 10 years.
Yeah, there's a couple of the fights on the cards that were, you know, decent fights, nothing great, but, I mean, entertaining enough for those, I don't want a boxer in front of me. I'm trying to remember the names of, you know, the two undercard fights that were on. One, you know, went the distance, and then the other one was a ninth round stoppage. And like I said, if I could, you know, remember the names right now, I would tell you.
Yeah, it's not important.
We got a good one coming up pretty soon. I think it might be this weekend. Paul the Punisher Williams and Kermit Cintron?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
It's going to be on HBO. I mean, that ought to be a hell of a fight. Because
the thing that's winning. Your boy,
what?
Danny Garcia, is fighting in the main event. 16-0 versus Christopher Fernandez, 18-9. In Pennsylvania.
Really?
At the arena.
When is that?
Friday, tomorrow night, dude. It's on
Telefon. Oh, I wish I would have known that. Did it say on there who the promoter is? It's got to be Golden Boy.
Yeah, Richard Schaefer.
Fucking A. On what?
And you can't go, right? Sounds like you can't make it.
No, I got plans tomorrow night. I didn't know. If I would have had more time, I would have got.
Wait, so you're not really missing much, except for that fight. Because everything else is 6 or 4 rounds, and it's pretty lopsided. One of them, 8-2, the super middleweight guy is 8-2, Latif Mundi, versus the guy who's 1-3.
Well, I've seen Latif Mundi. You know, he's a good fighter, he's quick. Because, throw some other names in the card, especially some of the local guys.
Carl Dargan versus Jorge Ruiz.
Okay, Carl Dynamite Dargan. He was sparring with Shane Mosley, getting ready for the Mayweather fight. He was a very highly touted amateur, and he turned pro.
Brother is fighting on this card. Mike Dargan is also fighting.
What?
Montgomery. Mike Dargan must be Carl Dargan's brother. He's one.
Might be.
Carl Dargan 7-0. He's fighting Jason Montgomery, who's 1-0. Dargan. Then also Andre Espeut, Espeut, 2-1 versus Charles Hayward, 2-2. And Jose
Ortiz
versus Jason Sosa. And we have a pretty decent card. Going on Twin River tomorrow down in Rhode Island. A lot of good prospects on this card. Guy I told you about when I went to the show in Plymouth a while back, Jesse Bad News Barboza, who has got a pretty interesting fan base that when he gets going in his fights, they start chanting, Bad News! And it sounds awesome. If you watch some beats, it's also Vladeen Biasi is another local prospect. He's 5-0, 4 knockouts. He's fighting Jewel Gardner. He's 4-0, 1 knockout, 1 draw. The main event is going to be Jason Perez at light welterweight. He's 22-3, 1 draw, 9 knockouts. Fighting Michael Clark, 39-5, with 1 draw and 18 knockouts.
Michael Clark in the contender?
What?
Michael Clark, who was on the year 2 of the contender? He ain't a bad fighter. I mean, he might be slipped a little bit, but he's still got some credentials.
Yeah, he's looks like he's only got one loss in his last two, three, four, five, six fights. And we've got, let's see, what we got going on down in West Virginia. We have a pretty interesting fight. Billy Lyell at light middleweight, 21-8, with 4 knockouts versus Martinez Clay, 13-24, with 4 knockouts. He's lost 6 in a row. I guess that's not as good a fight as I thought it was. The vacant USBA light heavyweight title is on the line in New York at the Ohinka Castle in Huntington on Friday. Byron Mitchell, 28-5 with 21 knockouts, goes against Otis Griffin, 21-6 with 8 knockouts. And also on that card, Michael Grant versus Kevin Vermette. Grant is 45-3 with 33 knockouts at heavyweight. Burnett is 13.
He might be Grant, the one that fought for the title?
Yeah, he's 45-3. It's got to be.
I didn't know he came back. I didn't know he was still fighting, honestly.
But he's fighting an 8-rounder, so that leads me to believe it must be one of his very first or second comeback fights. So, probably a pretty new development.
Yeah. I really, really wanted to see him do well. I mean, it was just past the 10-year anniversary when he got knocked out by Lennox Lewis, challenging for the title. And I mean, obviously he's a local guy. Norristown, from where I live, is only about 20 minutes. And I know people that have met him just on the street in Norristown, and been hell of a nice guy. A couple friends of mine saw him at a hokey shop in Norristown, and he went up to him and told him I was a boxer myself. And he signed a copy of the menu for me.
Nice.
Your
favorite guy is fighting this weekend, you know. Did you know this?
Who, Rex Macho?
No. Antonio Margarito. He's back.
Yeah, he is. He's back.
Tony's favorite embarrassment to the sport of boxing.
Yeah, right.
He's 37-6 with 27 knockouts, and he's going to go against the guy Roberto Garcia, who will hopefully knock him out. He's 28-2 with 21 knockouts, so he does have a nice knockout percentage. And this is actually for a title. That's kind of sad. Not only inviting Margarito back after such an incident, but you're giving him an instant title shot. The vacant WBC International light middleweight title is on the line.
Bob Arum being a douchebag.
And it's on pay-per-view. Screw that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, are you buying it?
No. Do I ever? I didn't buy for either.
I had a friend of mine, and it was kind of a birthday gift from my dad. He's a big fight fan, so I wanted to, you know, buy it so we could watch it together. My friend came over to watch it. I had some other friends who come over, and they wussed out at the last moment.
Yeah. I would say where I got it, but then, you know, I might get suspended from the Boxing Writers Association, like Eddie Goldman.
Yeah, well, keep that quiet. We'll keep that one quiet.
Anyway, I'm not even a member of that, by the way. There is a nice card built around this Margarito fight. The main event is a super featherweight fight between Jorge Solis, 38-2 with 28 knockouts, 2 draws, and Mario Santiago, 21-2 with 14 knockouts, 1 draw. And that is for the interim WBA World Super Featherweight title. And the USBA featherweight title is on the line between Miguel Angel Garcia, 21-0 with 18 knockouts, and Pedro Navarrete, 24-7 with 3 draws and 13 knockouts. And then you got a fight between two guys who are both 27-1. One guy with 1 draw. Rene Gonzalez has 21 knockouts, and Urbano Antillon has 20 knockouts. But that's about as evenly matched as you can guess. Almost have identical records. So that should be a decent fight. And then you got even another one. There's like 5 hardcore good fights on this that are over 10 rounds. Actually, 4 that are over 10 rounds. 1 that's 8 rounds. But the 8 round is a super featherweight fight between Marion Aguilar, 23-9, with one draw, and Michael Farinas, 27-2 with three draws and 24 knockouts. And Aguiar has 17. So that's on Saturday in Mexico, because Margarito could not get sanctioned in the United States because he sucks. And he likes to wrap his hands in cement.
Okay, well, yeah, that kind of can put a damper on it.
Cheater. All right. We also have a nice Paul Williams fight, like you said, versus Kermit Cintron. On the undercard of that fight is a pretty decent featherweight matchup between Martin Honorio, 28-4 with one draw, 14 knockouts, and Arguinas Mendez, 15-1 with 9 knockouts. But the Paul Williams fight is light middleweight, and Williams is 38-1 with 27 knockouts, and Cintron is 32-2 with 28 knockouts, and both of his losses have been by knockout, so he does have one draw. Whereas Paul's never been.
The three blemishes on his record, the two losses and one draw, who are they to?
Kermit?
Yeah.
Gotti?
No, never fought Gotti.
Margarito.
Margarito? Okay, who are the other two?
Two against Margarito, that's it. That's all I see.
Yeah, Margarito beat him twice. I was down there for the second one, beat the shit out of him.
Draw was Sergio Gabriel Martinez, who was 44-1-1
at the time. And that was the one they thought Martinez get robbed. Like, Martinez had put him down at one point, and, like, the referee was about to count 10, and he stopped. And so, like, the Cintron was getting up, and the referee was literally saying 10, and he stopped. And even if it said it should have even been called a draw, it said, like, Martinez actually dominated the fight. So, I mean, I didn't get to see it live that night, so I'll get to pieces. But see, this is an interesting fight. I'm going to tell you why. Williams is a guy, he is a good fighter. He throws a lot of punches. And but the problem is, and Martinez exposed him on it, that Williams has a long neck and low shoulders. So, and he keeps his hands so damn low. If you can counter him over the top, you can hit him like Martinez did, and Martinez proved not only can you hit him, you can hurt him. And Cintron, as flawed as he is a good power puncher. I mean, he's the guy that, you know, can knock you out with one punch. And his chance, I mean, it could be a case of, you know, Cintron being a little bit washed up and Williams just overwhelming him. Or it could be a case where Cintron lands one of them bombs over the top, and boom, fight's over.
All right. Well, it should be interesting either way. I like Paul Williams, as we know. And I'm rooting for him, no matter what, who he's fighting and what way he's fighting at. And I just like his reach. That's better than anything that he's got. He's got the power, obviously, but that reach is unbelievable. Anyway.
Yeah, good example.
That does it for this week, basically. There's nothing else going on beyond Saturday that's worth talking about. Except there's a Sunday fight in Tokyo with Daisuke. No? Not Daisuke from the Red Sox, but Daisuke from the flyweight division. Daisuke Naito is 35-3 with three draws, 22 knockouts. And he's fighting Liempech Sor Virapol, 17-6 with 10 knockouts. And there's a guy that's kind of just about the mismatch of the week here. Takuya Kogawa is 15-1 fighting a guy who is having his pro debut.
No,
not the worst we've seen, but that's pretty bad. Sithon. And good luck to the announcer who has to pronounce that name.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it for boxing. Let's go to the SureDog.com listings here. Let's see what's going on for the week. Oh, we didn't really get a chance to finish that discussion about the guy on the Ultimate Fighter there. Now, if people didn't realize that he was gay before this latest episode, they go through this episode and don't realize that they're really dumb. I mean, the guy basically just called himself out. He said that, he even said the words like, if you're going to come out, you got to come out with force. So, like, you know, there's no doubt about it at this point. I mean, I think most people are just like, you know, he's either wicked flamboyant or he's gay. You know, they're leaving that option open that he might not be. But, I mean, from the very beginning, I was just like, number one, I know he's gay. Number two, this is obviously a thing that they did purposely for a gimmick. And it almost made it an insult to injury by the way that they did his fight. It was the only fight so far. It went to the decision after two rounds. Clearly, the guy that won, he won the first round, obviously. He controlled the pace and everything. That's a better fight. But the second round, the other guy won. Hands down. I mean, it was an easy call. It's going to be a third round. That's the way they do it. But no, they give it to the gay guy. So there's no controversy. And not only controversy, but Chuck Liddell and Dana White controversy. Like, Chuck is staring down Dana to the point, like, you think he's going to punch him. And Dana's like, it's not me, it's the judges, you know. What are you mad-dogging me for, he said. The judges. And it was. They just made a bad decision. Dana didn't think it was the right decision either, but he's got to go with what they tell him. So, anyway. It was kind of funny, though, the way that this guy wrote his question. Like, on Yahoo Answers, he didn't get it. Like, he couldn't put two and two together, so I tried to do it for him. And one of the things that I noticed, maybe not a lot of people noticed, I'm just laughing every time I even think of it. But I think it was, like, either the last one or the one before that, the episode where they show this clip of these guys. They're doing their training drills. Nick Ring, the gay guy, is getting carried by another guy. And it's like, it's not like a fireman's carry like you do in wrestling. It's like one of those carries where it looks more like it's a guy carrying his wife over the threshold.
Right.
So you see Nick Ring go by, getting carried by his partner, and the look on his face, it's like he's enjoying it way too much. I just laugh at it every time I think of it because I guarantee you not a lot of people noticed it. But when you go back and you do see it, you're going to laugh because it's just funny. It's got that look. And it's bad enough the way he talks. You just figure it out right away. But, you know. And then he got pissed because somebody called him a bitch. I didn't even mention that before the Yahoo Answers. But that's another indicator. Was training, somebody said he was a bitch, and he got all upset, melodramatic. But the kicker was when they had the face-off between the two guys, and Ring puts out his finger, his index finger, and he goes, no, you didn't. You know? Like the girl doing the gossip. So, it's a whole fiasco. There isn't anything to get ratings, obviously, but the big question is still out there. What is the cause of the cancellation between the Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz fight that's still being left an open question on the show? So we haven't found that out yet. We did see Chuck go off the handle a little bit after the decision was read. So that was kind of interesting. He really did flip out pretty bad. He was angry. I really thought he was going to go after Dana. But Dana was funny because you know how Dana is. You know, he acts like he's a tough guy. He swears all the time and yells at the fighters who are on the show. But, like, the coaches, you know, especially a guy like Chuck Liddell, who's been with Dana since the beginning, are a different story. You know, he can't mouth off to them like he can the recruits. So when Chuck was pissed and Dana caught a glimpse of him, you could see fear in Dana's eyes. He thought he was going to get punched. What are you mad dogging me for? Just had to see it. So, as far as upcoming events, I know there's got to be something coming up for the UFC because we've had 113. It's coming up on May 8th. That's at the Bell Center, Montreal, Quebec. So that's what, the Saturday? Is that the 8th?
Yeah, it's Saturday the 8th.
So we got tomorrow, or is it, this, today's the 6th then. Tomorrow's the 7th. Saturday's the 8th. So tonight, Bellator Fighting Championship's going on. I think that's actually on Fox Sportsnet right now. I didn't realize I was alive, but I was looking through the channels and saw that's going on right now. We also have tomorrow, May 7th, MFC 25 Vindication. A couple UFC veterans on that card. Kayla's Laties versus Jesse Taylor. Both those guys from the UFC. Jesse Taylor, speaking of the Ultimate Fighter, was one of the guys that got kicked off the show for being drunk and stupid. Pete Spratt and Luigi Fioravante. I think those are both two guys in the UFC. Richie Hightower versus Gavin Neal. Wilson Gouveia versus Ryan Jimmel on that card. That should be pretty good. There's another one going up in Canada. Canada's getting big for the MMA. And it's funny because not all the states up there and provinces are actually legalized for MMA, but for some reason, Facebook is huge up there, even bigger than it is in the United States. So I think I have more Canadian Facebook friends who are into MMA than anybody else on Facebook. There's even a Team Bergeron up there, you know, for MMA.
Cool.
Also, let's see, we have Kumite, KSW 13 over in Voivodeship, Poland, going on tomorrow. What would it be without a fight in Brazil? Evolution, Sobral Extreme going on. Sobral, Ciara, Brazil tomorrow. And Pure Combat Drop Zones going on at Camp Pendleton, Oceanside, California. Also on Friday. Wild Bill's Fight Night going on in Duluth, Georgia. And Ultimate Challenge MMA Never Back Down is going on. London, England, at the Troxy. And Machida versus Shogun is the UFC going on this weekend in Montreal. And speaking of Montreal, there's another Bergeron in place for them for hockey. But I know Tony doesn't want to talk about hockey.
Shut up, Rich. Better be lucky than good.
About those Bruins this year, they're just playing with a fury like I've never seen. Like I, you know, we laugh about it because most of us that I, you know, in my generation, last time we saw the Bruins was when, or in the, even in the playoffs, they got past the first round. Maybe it was in the 90s when we were all in like high school. So,
yeah,
like a long
time coming. Yeah, and here's what I got to say about the team that I've been following since I've been born. One Stanley Cup appearance in the last 2 decades, that was 1997, they lost. They had a couple of Stanley Cup appearances in the 80s, 85, 87. They lost them, too. The last time they won the Stanley Cup championship was back-to-back. In fact, HBO just did a documentary on them Tuesday night. I wasn't even born yet. So that's all I got to say. You know, this year, a lot of bad luck. I mean, honestly, they shouldn't have even made the playoffs. I mean, it took them a shootout.
Okay, so that Carcillo you guys have, he's pretty ruthless.
Carcillo's a beast. People think he's just like an agitator and fighter, but he can play. I mean, he can score. I mean, he's a good player. But he's most well known for just being, you know, an agitator and a fighter and, you know, a rough and tough guy.
Kind of. I mean, I didn't really watch the Bruins when Byers played, but, you know, once I did some research on him because he's fighting in MMA there, I kind of got the feeling that Carcillo is a lot like him, like he used to be.
Right.
And mix things up, and he's always in the middle of some controversy. And the latest thing is, I guess, Savard bit him. The Bruins.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously they can't confirm it. There's no video footage of the bike. But there is some history with Tavares. How do you have a history? He's been caught biting other people before. So I think he was fined for it, too. So it's not like...
So what's his nickname, Tyson?
Tavares.
Well, yeah, you know, like I said, the Flyers were lucky to make it into the playoffs. It's amazing that they, you know, they beat the shit out of the Devils. You know, we were hoping that they would have, you know, some luck against the Bruins, but, you know, losing three of your best players in the last playoff series, it was like, you know, you were trying to be optimistic, but realism was setting in. But I'm going to make a vow to you right now that if the Bruins match up against the Schittsburg Fagwins, I'm rooting for the Bruins.
Well, Montreal's winning right now, so I don't know if
that's going to happen. Are they beating Schittsburg?
Yeah, with 6 minutes left. But this UFC 113, before we get off the combat sports trip here, we got not only the main event, Machida versus Hua, since you don't pronounce the R as an R in Brazilian, it's an H. Mauricio Shogun Hua versus Lyoto Machida. That's for the title, too, I believe. The UFC Light Heavyweight Championship. Also, there's actually a lot better fights on the undercard. We have Josh Koscheck, who's the number 5 welterweight, versus Paul Daly, who's the number 7 welterweight. So in the UK, they call him Semtex Daly. He's a tall guy, kind of like Paul Williams. But and Josh Koscheck is a wrestler. He takes people down and just, you know, pretty much that's his best part of his game is wrestling. Of course, he can punch too, but and do all that other funky stuff. But he's definitely more of a wrestler than anything else. So Daly, being a tall guy, he's going to have to watch out for the double leg takedowns and use his striking and elbows to win that one. But then there's another one that's pretty interesting: Sam Stout versus Jeremy Stevens. Stevens was a guy I met down in Iowa before he became a UFC star. And you know, always does his, the best job he can. He hasn't had a lot of great fights in the UFC, but you know, he's held his own. He's still sticking around, which is a good thing. A lot of guys like him have had a few losses here and there. He's been thrown out, but he's stuck it in because it's always close. So even if he does lose that one, it's going to be a good fight, I guarantee it. Then, as we mentioned, Kevin Ferguson, Kimbo Slice, in quotes now, that's his nickname, instead of, you know, his fight name, like it usually is. Sure Dog's listing it as a nickname. And he's fighting Matt Mitrione, which I guess we know, I think I mentioned before, but I just didn't know when it was coming up. I guess it's this weekend. Patrick Cote versus Alan Belcher, Tom Lawler versus Joe Dirksen, Marcus Davis versus Jonathan Goulet, Yoshiyuki Yoshida versus Michael Guyman, Tim Haig versus Joey Beltran, Tony Hendricks versus TJ Grant, and Jason McCartney versus John Salter. That rounds it out for UFC 13. And the only other thing going on, so we got 3 more events going on Saturday. 4 more events. 5, 6 more events. Alright, we have Champion Promotions, Clash of the Gladiators 2 in Palm Springs, California. We get Gladiators Fight Championship 1 in Brazil, Curitiba, Paraná. Then we also have Cage 13 Spring Break in Finland. Didn't know they had Spring Break in Finland. We get another one in Brazil, Pugna Show Fight 1. Saturday, and Gladiator Elite Cage Fighting 18 at the Wagon Wheel Theater in Warsaw, Indiana, also on Saturday, and then at Niagara Falls, that's the first, I think, Mayhem in the Mist, number 3, the Seneca Niagara Casino and Hotel, Niagara Falls, New York, that's on Saturday, Last fight on Saturday is in Dover, New Hampshire. Global Fight League 7. I actually just got invited to this today. I'm not sure if we're going to go to it, but the guys we had on last week, you know, that big conference call that we had going on, the guys from that whole team, one of their PR guys works for a company that sells these contour mouses, they're called. They're supposed to be good for people like that don't want to get carpal tunnel syndrome. It's all ergonomically designed so that you don't hurt yourself working on the computer. Even though it sounds like you have to be pretty weak to hurt yourself working on the computer. You know, if you spend as much time as a guy like I do on the computer, then, you know, this comes in handy. He sent me this free mouse. It's not even a mouse, really. You know those things at the bottom of your keyboard where you put, you know, you rest your wrist on so that you don't hurt yourself?
Yeah.
It's like a pad. Well, it kind of looks like that. There's a pad on either side, and then instead of your roller ball on the bottom of the mouse, it's just a roller bar across the pad, and you move the bar up and down and left and right. So it's kind of funky. It's pretty cool. Takes a little bit of getting used to, but it's definitely a lot less stress on your hand than a mouse. And that means I can get rid of my foam finger. So I have so much...
No, that's a foam finger. No, you gotta keep the foam finger. The foam finger rules.
Well, I'm keeping it, but I don't have to use it as a mouse pad anymore. So I got all this room on my desk. I don't know what to do with. Yeah, I got invited to that this Saturday in Dover, New Hampshire. I doubt I'm going to make it. It's kind of a trip for me, unless this guy can drive the whole way. I'm not going to happen, I don't think, but hey, we will get to their show on June 19th, Bike Week in New Hampshire. We'll definitely make that happen. That's going to be some good reporting when we get done with that. Lots of pictures, lots of new video, work. And actually, tonight I was supposed to go down to the TNT Boxing Gym. Went there last week. It's right next town over here, pretty much in Braintree, Massachusetts. And it's run by a guy, actually, who used to work the place called the McKeon Post, where they have boxing every Saturday. It was the first place I ever did formal boxing. And my uncles went through this program. I mean, it's been around forever, at least 20 years. And this guy is... started TNT Boxing in Braintree. I used to teach there at the McKeon Post, so I recognized him when I seen him. I went out and checked out their gym last week. Did a nice workout in my sauna suit from Elite MMA. Can't plug them enough. EliteMMA.com gave me the free sauna suit. I still haven't done a review on it. Like, it's been a year. Still a review on it. Sorry, Elite MMA, I will get to it. Anyway, I went there, I did the whole workout. They got like about 12 different heavy bags, so gives you a nice little variety. And they got one of those teardrop bags, which I've never used. Well, if I did use it, it was when I was at the Air Force Academy, so it was so long ago, I don't remember. But, it might not have been that type of bag, but I do remember they had an uppercut bag. You know, it's like a sideways heavy bag.
I have an uppercut bag.
So it's basically the same thing as a teardrop bag if it's at the right height. You know? So I could use one of those for the first time in a long time. I was practicing my uppercuts. And they had a nice little timing bag, a couple speed bags, beautiful ring. I didn't get up in the ring and, you know, feel my way around it, but beautiful, nice ring. Elevated off the floor like a real ring should be. And it's not that big a space that they have, but it's plenty for a nice little class of like 20 people to cycle through and partner up and, you know, use the whole gym. It's a nice little facility. It's way, way, way in the back of a place called the Bayshore Athletic Club, which is near the DMV in Braintree, Mass. On 14 Plain Street. So if you're in the area, listen to our show, and you want a good boxing gym to go to and sign up for. It's called TNT Boxing at the Bayshore Athletic Club. Check them out. I'm going to be posting a little bit of video, and maybe we'll have them on the show next week, or we'll do something for them. But I'm going to go see them again tomorrow, hopefully, get a workout in. And definitely it looks like this, the Battle of the Badges deal is going to happen again this year. It's going to be Battle of the Badges 3 sometime in either October or early November, late October, early November. And the dates that are being thrown around are October 23rd and November 6th. So if you're in the Boston area and you want to see some good fights between cops and New Yorker fire department guys, then keep those dates open. And I'm going to be on the card for sure. There's no about a doubt at this time. Wicked hot. Getting ready for my showdown with the New Yorkers. I don't know what I'm going to be for a weight, though. It's kind of funky. I used to, when I was working out hardcore every day, I used to be around $195, but now I'm like 210 to 215 and can't get under it. No matter what I'm doing for workouts, so I don't know what the heck's going on, but apparently my metabolism, something's changed. I took too much time off, that's probably what it is. Okay, fine. Well, I'd like to get down to $185, maybe. Could be a good way for me. $175 would be better, but I don't know, that's tough. $195 was tough enough to get to. Ten more pounds, that's enough, I think, for now. But other than that, I don't know what else to talk about. There's just not that much news this week.
No, not actually a whole lot going on this week, which is kind of sucks. I'm drawing a brain freeze here. I get confused from time to time. Taking a lot of beatings. How it is.
Wow.
Yeah, I am really getting, these teeth that are gone, I am really, really getting stupid. I'm like also looking something up and I was like, what the hell? Why can't I find it? Then I realize I'm putting in the wrong information and like, yeah, I'm looking. This is not good. I'm losing it. I never had much of it. What I had is gone.
Well, the good news is we do have some good news. I was talking about the big deal there with my buddy from Norwich who got killed over in Iraq by the IED, and we did the big project to get his plaque made. Well, just the other day we got word that Walmart was coming through with $1,000. Big check. Which is going to be just about a little less than half of the plaque's cost, and we already have a bit of cash in hand for donations from most of combat vets, so that's even better. You know, of course, whoever we get it from is good, but the fact that this guy is a combat veteran who killed an action, most of the people that paid for his plaque were fellow veterans, and people that are in combat right now overseas, at least in country, it's just phenomenal. It just goes to show you what kind of guy he was. And, how people that sometimes it takes one to know one, I guess. People that are in combat appreciate it a little bit more than us folks at home who have to watch the news to see combat. And even now, with the news the way it is, we don't even see it anymore. It's old news, so they don't talk about it unless there's a suicide bombing or something. But
yeah, right. Don't talk about any of the good shit,
So we're hopefully going to dedicate that sometime in November. It looks like even if we wanted to do it Memorial Day, we wouldn't have time to have actually make the plaque itself by that time. So it's going to have to be sometime in the fall or winter, and I'm looking at Memorial Day, so we'll update everybody on it as it happens, and we're trying to set up another event pretty soon just to start adding funds to his scholarship fund that we're going to start to get 501c3 status for and all that. And I didn't get to go, but our good buddy Steve Martin, who's helping out with that, we had on the show last week. The comedian, yeah. The businessman. From BePositiveProject.com, Steve Martin. We had him on the show. We lost him at the end, but I emailed him after that. And he wasn't bent out of shape about it, so we don't have to worry about that. But anyway, he just had a Cinco de Mayo party last night that I was supposed to go to, but I didn't end up going to. And we're going to try to do another event with him around Memorial Day. So before that happens, we'll definitely get that on the show. Talk about that. But other than that, I really have nothing else. We got, we're going to have a half an hour of dead air if I keep trying to make stuff up, so. That's it.
Well,
What do you got, Tony? I know you got Tony.
I'm not going to hold him out nothing. I've been forgetful tonight. He don't forget shit. Like I said, I've lost a little bit of it with the wisdom tooth out. And you have been so proud of me the other day, Rich. I mean, I went to the dentist, and, you know, I went in there, I was talking trash. So, you know, I go in there, and, you know, I mean, the guy's really cool. I'm sitting there bullshitting with him. And they numbed me up a little bit. They didn't put me under because it was going to be a relatively simple extraction. So the guy's joking with me the whole time. He goes, okay, you're going to feel some crack. It's going to sound like an eggshell breaking. Whatever, he's tugging and all that, and it wasn't too bad. It was about like 20 seconds later, he's like, okay, hold on 1 second. I got to get the special instrument out because, you know, you're on kind of a funny angle, you know. So he goes, but don't close your mouth because you're, like, literally hanging by a thread. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, but you don't feel nothing. You don't feel like you've done anything. And next thing you know, he's telling you that you're, like, literally hanging there. He pops it out. You know, they put the gauze in my mouth. And so I drive home. It was only, like, 2 miles from my house. I drive home. I'm fine. So my neighbor's over, and he's got a notoriously weak stomach. So I take the bloody pack of gauze out of my mouth and I throw it away. And he's looking at that and you can see him getting squeamish. So I take another one of these gauze packs and I go to put it in where it's supposed to be and I did it wrong. Next thing I know, I'm trying to get this thing out of my mouth and I'm starting to gag. So I'm like, go to like, you know, I mean, he's about to start throwing up. And finally, they're like, oh, my God, you're choking. I'm telling everybody, get away from me. Let me get this out. Finally, I took my whole hand in my mouth. I pulled this thing out. He's about to throw up. Put the new pack in. I wrote on Facebook, getting that. I'm like, yeah, all went well because I almost choked in a pack of gauze. I said, gauze is meant to be wrapped around your hands, not put in your mouth. And I don't know if you know.
I hate that when they make you put that freaking plastic thing in so that you do the x-rays.
Yeah, and that literally too.
And they make you bite down on it, and it's like the most awkward thing
to
get down on.
Oh, yeah. I had that the other day too. Do you know the coach from Coast Guard, Tom Barra, or Barra?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Okay, he's the coach from Coast Guard up in Connecticut. He's a good friend of Iceman John Scully. Well, I see him every year at the Lock Haven Show. And this year I had the privilege of meeting his, his son, who's like 11 or 12 years old. Really getting into the boxing and the karate and all the different aspects of combat sports. And if he was talking to us that night, he was a really, really nice kid. So he emailed me on Facebook the other day. He goes, why did you have gauze in your mouth? And I'm like, they had to take out a tooth. Oh, my God, that sucks. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, you're 12 years old, you don't have to worry about wisdom teeth. You know, you get a little bit older, you might have that problem. But it was so funny the way he said it. Like, yeah, man. Never should have, you know, always gauze should be on the hands, not in your mouth. Why did you have gauze in your mouth anyway? I mean, thankfully it wasn't any of Margarita's gauze because it would have been plaster Paris in my mouth.
Wow.
Well, Rich, I made a joke. You know, you should appreciate that.
Charlie Babbitt made a joke.
Rain Man made a joke because I am awesome.
Mike Tyson.
So, Rich, you were making fun. you were making fun of me, you know, about my hockey team, you know, and I can appreciate that. But now I'm going back to what the guy told me down in Florida last month, and I laughed at him. I laughed at him because of you. Because you talk a lot of shit. You and your fellow Bostonians talk all this trash. I'm down in Florida, and I'm having breakfast. And the guy's like, oh, going to a baseball game today. I said, well, yeah, I'm going to the game. I'm looking at him. He goes, how many of you guys got at least one more spring training game to go after us? Right after this game today. I said, yeah, you're playing us. I said, yeah, who's your team? The Tampa Bay Rays. And I want to say, yeah, let me kick your ass 2 years ago. Ha, 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 ha. And I just want to let you know, we're picked to win the World Series this year. And I'm going to say, yeah, by who, you? And I was like, yeah, good luck getting past the Yankees and the Red Sox. And now they're kicking the shit out of the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Yeah, the Rays are good this year.
I know they're good this year. I don't know where it came from.
Sort of pulling it together, but I don't know. So it's like, usually every year there's something that you can pick out, and you go, the Red Sox need another this. It's a shortstop, or an outfielder, or a starting pitcher, or somebody in the bullpen. You know, there's always that category where you can see there's a weakness. But this year, it's just like, you don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even figure it out. Like, they don't even know what to do with Wakefield, and they put him in the bullpen, or keep him as a starter. Matsuzakis had a great game the other day, throwing a one-hitter, and then he gets up four home runs in a row. It's like, ah. Oh.
Wow.
I don't know if you recall. They gave up four home runs after one hit.
That is actually kind of awesome.
But the Celtics and the Bruins, I guess, you know, they're giving us something to brag about, so we can forget about the Red Sox until it matters. Looking forward to it. Watching that. I thought the Celtics were playing tonight, but I don't see them. They had two nights off. I don't know what the story is. Ooh, somebody just got hit in the Red Sox game. Euclid, of course. He always gets hit.
Well, Phillies are winning. It's 7-2. And I predict that'll be the final, only because the game was played at 3 o'clock this afternoon. We actually played probably the top-ranked team in the National League, the St. Louis Cardinals. Four-game series. We beat him three of them.
Nice.
Got some good starting pitching, which is impressive. I mean, it was like, you know, you had Blanton coming off the DL, so you don't know how good he was going to be, but he pitched, you know, respectively. You had Hamels, who's been struggling, but he, you know, pitched well. And you had Kendrick, who's been crap this year. He pitched awesome. And then today was this Roy Halladay guy. Is he any good?
Yeah.
He's from the AL East. You should have heard of him before.
Yeah, we should have had him. I heard of him.
Nah.
I got an argument with the guy today I was working with about who I would rather have on the Red Sox, and he seems to think that we should have got A-Rod, and I said, no, you can keep your A-Rod. I don't want him.
A-Rod,
Alex Rodriguez.
I know who A-Rod is.
All right. Well, I thought you were questioning. Anyway, the basic point I made was I'd rather have Jason Bay because, you know, he's cheaper, number one. And number two, Alex Rodriguez was really cursed when he came to the Yankees. And I don't know whether he would have had the same luck with the Red Sox, but he had a lot of years where he was having a lot of trouble. Didn't do as well as he should have.
Goddamn.
It was like last year, too. He had like 13 games in a row where he had an error. So,
wow.
Yeah, a lot of things happened that were like, you know, I don't know whether it was his personality or the type of person he was or whether it was just fate, but just kept having these bad errors and game-losing errors in a lot of cases. Wasn't hitting. You know, just personality-wise, as a person, I just don't like the guy. Whether he's a Yankee or not,
right.
He's too cocky. And I'll
tell you who I can't stand, and I'll never be able to stand him. He's actually on your team now. is J.D. Drum.
Really? That's
fuck
funny.
Him.
So, like, I'm going to have Jason Bay if we could have him. I mean, they play this pretty
much. You know what? Jason Bay, I actually got disappointed when he went to the Mets because he was on my fantasy team last year. He put up pretty good numbers, 36 homers. And he's too good because we're in a keeper league where you get to keep like five players from year to year. And he was too good of a player to not keep. But I knew his numbers were going to hurt going from Boston that has a great corner in right field for left-handed batters and then going to a shitty field. That is definitely a pitcher's ballpark.
We really didn't pick up a single person who could replace that kind of number in any of the last year. I mean,
Adrian
was the best guy we picked up in the offseason. He's really washed up. I mean, he's still good.
Right.
Just not as good as he
is. I'll tell you what we all hate about J.D. Drew in Philadelphia. And this is going back to 1997 when he was in the draft. They had the draft that year in the Phillies were really, really, really atrocious at the time, and they kind of made it clear that they were going to pick Jamie Drew with the second pick of the draft. And I forget who had the number one pick and who they were taking, but we were taking Drew with number two, and agent comes out and says, don't take him. We're not going to sign with you. And it's kind of the Phillies being bullish anyway. They're like, we want $10 million guaranteed, you know, to sign. Well, this is not the NFL. I mean, you can get a guy that, you know, gets drafted and never gets out of the minors.
Right.
So they're like, we want $10 million minimum just to sign. And the Phillies said, well, we're not going to do that. And they're like, well, don't draft us then. And the idiots.
Speaking of the devil, J.D. Drew is up right now with the bases loaded.
Oh, I hope he strikes better. You know what? I hope he gets an RBI by getting hit in the head with a pitch.
He's got a 3-1 count. I think he's getting walked.
With the bases loaded?
The bases loaded. One out.
You mean not an intentional walk?
No, but he's going to get walked, I bet.
Well, I still hope he gets beamed in the head. I'd rather that happen.
He walked. The droid comes home for the 8-6 lead. The Angels. Thank God for the Angels, man.
the Angels.
We'd be really hurt.
Angels are horrible this year.
A lot of good games there. But back to
J.D. Drew, you know, the Phillies are stupid, you know, for signing him anyway, after he said to him and his agent that, you know, we're not going to play on your team. So they sign this guy. He refuses to play. He sits out for the entire year, goes into an independent league, goes back in the draft the next year. I think it was the Cardinals that took him. He signed at the Cardinals. So every time he ever came back to Philadelphia, and I'm still going, this is still 13 years later, we will boo the living shit out of him. We will cheer him if he gets injured. People have thrown batteries at him. D-batteries, because J.D. Drew. He is, you know, because, well, see, you got to understand something. In this panel,
this year, I'm going to get you a J.D. Drew autographed baseball.
Thank you, and that way I can have my dog slobber all over it and take a shit on it. But I'll tell you, and you got to understand, like, the mentality we have in Philadelphia, because, you know, we've always been, like, you know, a real blue-collar town, real working-class town. And for years, even when we were good, I remember with you that was talking on Facebook the other day, was another friend of mine from Boston about, like, has there ever been three championships in one city in one year? Is that you?
That was me.
Okay.
This year. I don't think there has. I mean, well, maybe three, but definitely not all four teams. Baseball, hockey.
I don't think there's ever been four, but I know Philadelphia came close. Philadelphia came close back in, like, 1980. Like, they put, like, the Flyers in, like, the Stanley Cup. They put, like, the Eagles in the World Series. Or the Eagles in the Super Bowl. They both lost. And then the Phillies won the World Series. They had three teams in the championship, and the Sixers were pretty damn good back then, too.
I'm pretty sure the Celtics, the Red Sox, and the Patriots did it in one year, but they weren't the same seasons, you know what I mean? It was like, you know, the following year for the Patriots or whatever, and
Right.
Whatever the overlap is because of the different seasons. It wasn't all the same year season, but it was like the same year they all got the championship.
That's close enough to me, you know, or for me. But we always had a problem here in this town, like, because, you know, people always like ragged. They always ragged like our fans. They're the worst fans of baseball. And granted, we do dumb shit, like a kid runs in the field and gets tased. You heard about that, right?
That was something I meant to bring up, too. Billy's
fan. That was just like, come on, you know what we should have played to start the show? We should have played, don't tase me, bro, don't tase me. But,
not only the guy that got tased, but the guy that was firing the taser, I mean, what a picture. Did you see the picture of him?
Yeah, it was a great photo, wasn't it?
That guy is
a... A friend of mine had that on his Facebook profile photo. But then we had the situation a couple weeks ago. We had that the fat slob of a kid that intentionally threw up on the police officer's daughter. We had a situation last year where there was a big fight at the stadium after the game, and a kid got killed. You know, so our fans have a horrible reputation. But when I wrote an article a couple years ago about what it was finally like to win, and I said, well, part of what makes us is we have two things that will kind of work in our favor and work against us at the same time. We're, like, really, really a tough city. That's why Rocky was based out of Philadelphia, because it's very much blue-collar, very much underdog. People always calling you a loser. You're always trying to fight to win. And you get it expected. So we always have this huge chip on our shoulders. I know I do. Huge chip, and I'm always playing like, you know what, it's us against them. No matter who we're playing, no matter if it was the Rays, us against them. Us against the Rays.
That's the Philly reaction I've ever seen is when Hank Lundy, after the fight in Boston here, got into a tough tussle there almost with the other guy from the other fighter's corner. Must have been his father. Must have been a relative or something, the guy, because he was just too into it. But he confronted Lundy after the fight, and he kept yelling over and over, "You didn't win that fight. You didn't win that fight." And Hank just goes, "I'm from Philly. I'll fight you right now."
Yeah.
Just done 12 rounds with the other guy.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, like I said, one of the best compliments I've ever gotten as a fighter. Two of them, actually. Dr. Cox was, we were doing an article one time. And basically what he said about me was he categorized me as the quintessential Philadelphia fighter. Just a blood and guts type of warrior type of guy that's going to go in there and, you know, just go out there and, you know, just go out there and let it all hang out. It was like, we were doing an article about me and this other kid on the team that were both, you know, getting picked to fight out in Reno in the East West Classic. We were both seniors. We've both been on the team 4 years. Totally different personalities. And he and I weren't the best friends either. But he was like a real conservative guy, real quiet, you know, kind of nerdy, you know, goody-goody two-shoes. Magna cum laude, you know, honor student. And then you had me. I'm out there, you know, just always getting into some kind of bullshit. And the way he would fight was very calculated, very slow. Like, when he would practice, he would do everything real slow and try to be perfect. I was just, you know what, fuck perfect. I'm going out there to hit you, and I don't care where. And you're going to hit me, fine, hit me, and it's going to see who falls first. So that's what Dr. Cox was doing this interview about this article. And he goes, we got this other kid, Chad. He's very much a thinking man's fighter. He's very calculating. Then he goes, then you got the other guy over here. He's a quintessential Philadelphian. He's always going out there for risks. He's going for broke. You know, he's a kind of, you know, like tit for tat. Let's see who's gonna fall. And that's kind of, you know, what made me training in that Philadelphia gym. You know, like this, and we have, in this city, we have a chip on our shoulder because people always call us losers. You know. You know, we were always saying, like, oh, you know, we want to compare, like, I don't know, like, one time people were, like, saying, like, oh, you know, Philly's a small market town. It's like, no, we're not. Philadelphia's one of the biggest markets in the country. You know, we want to be up there, right up there with the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers and those big-time cities. We don't want to be thought of, like, the Brewers or the Indians. It's like, you know, we want to know that, you know, we're big time also. And so that's the thing. It's like, every sport we go into, it's us against them, and we don't like them, period.
All right, well, and, little glimpse of Philly. Maybe not the best part of Philly, but, you know, I get to at least walk around town a little bit, and I'll have to definitely do the thing you did last year by coming up here and going on a Red Sox game. You'll have to go to the Phillies game with you this year.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, yeah. You come down, I mean, I can...
It's like maybe 6 hours total, you know, on the bus. Two buses, so you gotta go to New York, and then you stop there, and they take you right to Philly from New York, pretty much. There's a couple stops, but, you know, they're pretty limited. It's not like you have an hour layover or whatever. It's a nice, fast trip. I get to find that out on my way out to Illinois. But, you know, obviously the Rocky thing makes it a fight now. Fighters, period. It's kind of like, I guess, well, Chicago in a lot of ways. Chicago is one of those big fight towns.
Yeah, you're in Chicago in 2 months, I can't wait.
Anyway, I guess, pretty much we're running a combat sports talk for the night. And I got some stuff to do. So we're going to call it a night here, and we're going to have Butterbean, Eric Esch, on next week. So, if you're a big four-round boxing fan, and you like Jackass, you might want to listen in. This Butterbean, it's a pretty good interview. I mean, I speak from experience. If you go to fightbeat.com, or if you do a search for my name, Rich Bergeron, on Google, you'll find my article called Crossing Over, about how he was really one of the first pioneers to go from boxing to mixed martial arts and back. You see my both ways, so to speak. He would not only, you know, cross over and go from boxing and do an MMA fight, but then he would go back and do a boxing fight. You know, always back and forth. And nowadays, he does more MMA than boxing. I don't know what his last boxing fight was, but he's still, I'm pretty sure, doing it back and forth, so...
Yeah, I thought he did one like a few weeks, a few months ago. I'm sending you the clip. Maybe we can post it on our site to promoting it when he did the WrestleMania. Butterbean's done three things in Philadelphia. And I'll use this to kind of close out my part of the show. Butterbean's had three memorable events in Philadelphia. What's sort of memorable, what not so memorable? Butterbean main evented the last Tuesday night fight card, which was held at the Blue Horizon in Philadelphia. He scored a knockout in like 20, 30 seconds, I think, over this guy. But that was the last Tuesday night fight. It was from the Blue Horizon. Butterbean, in the video I'm sending you right now, appeared at WrestleMania 15, which was held in Philadelphia with Lee Paz as the guest referee, and he knocked out a professional wrestler by the name of Bart Gunn in a hybrid boxing-slash-wrestling match, and I believe it wasn't fake. Then the last one was the one I talked about a few weeks ago when he came to do that, like, exhibition on a Damon Feldman card, and a police officer who was, like, 6'4", was just out boxing, and Butterbean was getting pissed off, and he almost, like, attacked the ring announcer after the fight.
So this is actually a charity fight where it's for a slain Boston police officer, so it's kind of ironic because, you know, here's these two guys fighting on an MMA card for a charity that involves cops. We just did Battle of the Badges, and we didn't even know about this, you know, so it was kind of like, man, if only I had found out about this 2 weeks ago, we could have had them at the fight, and they could have promoted this matchup, you know, because it's not only for charity, but it also has something to do with badges and cops, so that would have been great, but we didn't find out until it was too late, so now we're getting Butterbean first, and we're going to work on getting buyers, maybe, same time or around then before the fight anyway on the 21st of May. It's going to be in Worcester. But that's actually way down on the undercard. There's a bunch of other fights, and the main event on that is going to be the World's Strongest Man versus Tim Sylvia, who I was told I have to text to get him into an interview, and he didn't respond to my text last night, so that's why we don't have him on tonight.
Okay.
I don't mean to badmouth him, but Tim Sylvia, I mean, I'm not going to be crying because I didn't get the Tim Sylvia interview. a guy that gets knocked out in like 10 seconds by Ray Mercer, not on the top of my list. I want to get on the radio. Not to say that we wouldn't want him on. You know, I can't say that. You know, it's not like I don't want him on. But, you know, it's not like it's going to ruin my day. And, you know, if we don't get him on, we'll get somebody else. We got another couple weeks before this event. I'm definitely going to be there. So we'll have a post-fight thing on that, too. And other than that, well, that's it. We only got 9 minutes left anyway, so that's all there is to it.
I just posted a video on your Facebook page, so you might want to check that out.
I see that. You shared a link on my wall. How nice
of you. That's
all good. All right, folks. Until next week. Signing off.
Right, 2 times later. Bye-bye.